And then you call me, and it's not so bad, it's not so bad.
Listening to KPOO San Francisco. This is Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. I'm Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant. I'm your host for the day, and I have Jason McLean with me, our co-host. And for those of you who have heard Jason before, he is an evolutionary guide, as he likes to describe himself, and has a wonderful guest on for us today. So I don't know if you want to do the initial introduction, and I can read the bio or whatever you want. How do you want to introduce her?
Sure, Julie. So, thanks, Julie. I am Jason McLean, and welcome to Reality Sandwich. I've brought Soraya Keating in today. Soraya's doing some wonderful work with drama therapy in and around the community. And Julie has her bio.
Okay. So, Soraya is a registered drama therapist, actress, and drama teacher with a private practice at the Living Arts Counseling Center in Oakland. She teaches theater throughout the Bay Area with Performing Arts Workshop, Vector Theater Company, New Conservatory Theater Company, and a unique theater for change program with men incarcerated for violent crimes in San Francisco jail, which we're going to talk more about. A graduate of the Expressive Arts Therapy Program at the California Institute of Integral Studies, Soraya has been practicing drama therapy and expressive arts therapy with children, teens, and adults since 1998. She also performs regularly with Bay Area theater companies and was last seen at the Actors Ensemble of Berkeley production of Seduced. Her intention in drama therapy is to work with the tools of theater to bring to life the imagination and utilize its power to create new possibilities for being with her clients. And she believes strongly in the power of the imagination to transform lives, especially when combined with the three key ingredients: commitment, compassion, and action. Hello, Soraya. It's good to have you with us.
Hi, Julie. Hi, Jason. It's nice to be here.
So this is fascinating. I'm looking forward to this conversation today because I really don't know that much about drama, but more before we get started, I have to ask about the program that you're doing. Considering the last program that was just on was Prison Focus, where they talk a lot about prisoners' rights and rehabilitating prisoners and all of those really positive aspects. So I'd love to get a sense of what you're doing with them and how you've found this therapy to really be helpful and therapeutic.
Sure. I currently work at San Francisco County Jail in this very unique program for men who have been incarcerated for violent crimes. The program is called RSVP, or Resolve to Stop the Violence Project. And the focus of the program is on helping men to understand how they've learned or been conditioned to become violent or to behave in aggressive or violent ways as part of their male role identity system. So what we do in the theater program is we help the men look at the ways in which this conditioning has happened and also look at new possibilities for what it means to be a man in the world aside from what they're used to or what they're conditioned to be. So we use elements from theater. We use improvisation, role play. We sometimes write short plays. We use whatever tools we need to help the men in the program unlearn the conditioning that they have learned since they were kids, usually.
Wow.
You know, that's actually really exciting for me to hear, because as you both know and as the listeners who heard me the first time know, I was in prison at 19, and I discovered that they had taken the language of rehabilitation out of the penal code, and it was about strictly punishment. And so to hear that there's really taking, you know, we're taking another look at perhaps rehabilitation is a wonderful thing. But I'm curious, what is drama therapy?
Well, drama therapy is an amazing field. It's new to the world in some ways and also old to the world in other ways. Drama therapy, to me, is the use of tools from theater, from improvisation, and from storytelling in psychotherapy, or using theater tools to help people create lives that they want to be living, to help people who are struggling with problems or challenges related to depression, relationship struggles, low self-esteem, anxiety, people who are in a stuck place in their life and want to create something different.
And so do you actually have them develop different characters for themselves, or how does it work? Like, if I came to you for a drama therapy session, what would we do?
Mm, good question. Well, sometimes, to answer your first question, we do have people create different characters for themselves. In fact, one of the basic theories behind drama therapy is that we are, as human beings, a collection of the different roles we play in life. We are all characters on the grand stage. This is the stage of your life. And just as actors play roles on stage, we are simultaneously playing roles in our own life. But not only are we playing roles, we're also the director, the writer, the actor, and the audience at the same time. But normally we're not aware of all those.
Yes.
So we look in drama therapy at what roles in our lives are dominating and what roles are underdeveloped. So we could say we have some roles that are very well developed. For example, maybe we have a role, we see ourselves as a helper in the world, and that role is really easy to us. And other roles might be underdeveloped. And in drama therapy, we seek to create some sort of balance, especially when people are feeling stuck. It's often because certain roles have gone out of balance with other roles. So we try to bring in activities, exercises, ways in which the roles that are underdeveloped can be strengthened. So in a typical session, we might do anything from working on character roles that need to be strengthened to looking at how certain roles that are overdeveloped got into place in the first place. For example, in the men in the jail that I work at, how that role of the violent man, or they call it in that program, the hitman. How that particular role came to dominate who they are, and how perhaps a more tender, loving, vulnerable man is not as accessible. It's not that it's not there, it's just not as accessible to them.
What's the... Oh, boy, what do I want to call it? What's the reception of these prisoners to this form of therapy? Is it something that they really get into? Is it something that is accessible to anybody, or do you have to have more of a drama flavor to your kind of personality to really get into it?
Well, I find that overall the men are very happy to have something dynamic and alive in the program that they're doing. So overall, there's a pretty good reception to it. And there's also some people who are mixed about it. One thing I see pretty often, since the program has somewhat of a high turnover rate. There's new men coming in all the time and some men leaving. Is with some men, there's a real resistance to any form of play. In fact, the word play seems to not even be in their vocabulary. And one thing we do, especially early on in drama therapy, is we create an environment which fosters play and playfulness and spontaneity. So at first that shocks some of the men, and and they don't want to go there at first. But one of the most beneficial parts of the program, as I see it, is that the men who have been there for a while, who are more leaders within the jail community, have taken on a role or a mentor role to the men who are newer to the program, and they lead the other men, or they help create more of an openness to it.
So how is drama therapy different than just psychotherapy?
Good question. Drama therapy and psychotherapy are different in that drama therapy is more of an embodied approach to psychotherapy. In drama therapy, we like to get away from simply talking about issues or challenges or what we can do with them, and we move into action. So it's a very action-oriented approach, which emphasizes a couple things, but one being aliveness, or bringing out aliveness as a key part of the healing process, a key part of transformation. One thing that I think also distinguishes drama therapy from psychotherapy per se is that we move into being who we want to be in the world in the drama therapy space itself. So in other words, we become in the moment who we say we want to create. So there's more of an emphasis on present moment.
So it's not just distinguishing what's going on and who you would like to be, but then also embodying it so you get an opportunity to actually integrate it in a playful environment.
Yeah, one of the ideas behind drama therapy is that people sometimes need role rehearsal time. That's a phrase from drama therapy, role rehearsal, or time to practice certain behaviors or certain even sets of beliefs that go along with those behaviors in the play space first, and then they can bring it out into the real world. So there's this necessary practice time that has to happen. Along with that, there's also in some people what we call an act hunger. Or often people are hungry. They have desires to act in certain ways that they might not let themselves act in real life, whether it be kind of like a rock star or perhaps totally seductive or any kind of extreme role that they might cut themselves off from. In the drama therapy space, we give permission for that to happen, and we encourage even it to be exaggerated.
So I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to this and I'm finding it seems really fun when I hear, and it seems like it makes a lot of sense that it would really be helpful for somebody if they could kind of practice or put on a new hat and try something new out. But then my personal fear of being the center of attention and get, which is kind of funny that I'm on the radio, but on the radio people can't see me. It's different. But so how do you have to be good at acting? I guess I'm trying to get a sense of, this seems really fun to me and it also seems terrifying at the same time. So I don't know. Can you address that? I'm sure I'm probably not the first person. Do those type of people just not do this? Or is this type of therapy really good for people that are in that space?
Well, to address your last question, I would say that this kind of therapy would be perfect for people who are in a space where they have some sort of fear around, quote-unquote, acting. And it's very common that people initially come to drama therapy with some questions or some hesitation, some fear around, ooh, am I going to have to perform? And one of the beautiful things to me about drama therapy is that the emphasis is really not on performing for others. Perhaps that's one of the things that also distinguishes drama therapy from a theatrical performance. But the emphasis is on feeding and fertilizing our own vitality in whatever way works for a particular person. And so that process might be slow or different for one person who has more of a fear around acting than others. But in any case, what I emphasize is really following the curiosity of each person. What is it that you're curious about? What's making you even curious about drama therapy? What part mm-hmm. of yourself?
Mm-hmm.
To me, if there's even a curiosity, that means there's a seed of possibility there, that there's something that could perhaps use some watering.
Mm-hmm.
I use plant metaphors a lot. Something that needs to be grown mm-hmm. inside oneself.
You know, I imagine in the context of jail inmates, there's also internal as well as external circumstances that has them not used to playing. I imagine if they went back out on the street and then tried to be playful and spontaneous and fun with those, you know, people down on the corner in the Tenderloin, it might not be so effective in terms of the communal response. So what I'm curious, if there's some way that you assist them in getting out of that environment? Is there an additional program if they go through RSVP after that? Or are they just... It seems pretty clear to me that the environment they're in when they come out of that could either foster, be a safe environment for them to continue to unearth the depths of themselves that have come out to play, or shut down again.
That's a really good point that you're making, and you're pointing to, for me, one of the biggest faults of our criminal justice system, is that after jail, men often, in my opinion, don't have the resources, don't have that support net that they need. And they do often go back into the same environment in which the hitman or
sure.
whatever different role behaviors they were demonstrating before do come out.
Right.
So a couple things. What we try to emphasize in the drama program at the jail is getting men to look at the choices that they make in a very conscious way, to step back from this role they're playing, to become a witness or the audience. That's something that's really important in drama therapy in general, is to be able to be your own witness and step back from this drama in the melodramatic sense that you've created.
Some even say that being able to retreat into that all-present, all-ever-present witness is the essence of spirituality and enlightenment.
Yeah.
To be able to maintain that through all of your major states, dream states, waking states, and even deep sleep for those who have meditated for years and years.
Yeah, if you can be in that state and when the storm is going on.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Equanimous.
So if we can take a step back just for you personally, I'm curious how you got involved in all of this and how acting has helped you with this, and if you prefer one over the other, or how they feed each other. I'm just curious a little bit about your personal story and how you got involved in helping people through this very unique way.
Sure. Well, I had been interested in both acting and in psychology since I was fairly young. I think acting was my first dream career when I was 5 years old, being involved in the theater, or a dancer. And then psychology came later in life, probably more in my teens. And when I was in college, I studied a little acting, studied a little psychology, but made the very practical decision to go into the psychology world rather than the very unpractical and unreasonable choice, as some people might say, to go into the acting world. Then later, a couple years later, I had been in a PhD program in psychology over at University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, and I found myself becoming very depressed, really, really uninterested in what we were doing. The program is very cognitive, and I decided to take an improv class to spruce up my life a little bit with improv. And that one class that I took was kind of the beginning of the end, I could say.
End of your depression? Or?
Well, yeah, the end of my depression.
Good, good.
And the beginning of many new doors. when I was in that class, and it turned into just from a class into a troupe, became part of an improv troupe there, I began to see the power of play. I began to experience it for myself. I think that was the key thing, not just see it from my mind, but experience it. And the power of laughter. And I knew that I couldn't continue the same path anymore. So I found out about this wonderful program in expressive arts therapy and drama therapy that they have at the California Institute of Integral Studies, and moved out to California to pursue it. So that's
which
that's
is a
great.
Wonderful school with an incredibly rich curriculum, especially for those interested in an integral approach to life.
It is. I would agree with that. It's an amazing place where you can bring in all parts of yourself to your studies, the spiritual side, your emotional side, your creative side. To me, it is a wonderful place. Yeah.
How did the field of drama therapy arise? Do you know?
Yeah, well, it's one of those fields that has many different roots. I would say there are three or different four main parts of our culture that I tie drama therapy to. One is ancient shamanistic ritual and contemporary ritual as well. In drama therapy, we enter a metaphoric space or a play space, which is like entering a reality that's different from our normal reality. And to me, that comes from the early work of the shamans, who would also enter a metaphoric space, the space of the spirit world, where they would draw on resources, symbols, animal symbols, dream figures, archetypal figures, gods and goddesses that give them resources to use in their own life that are not normally accessible. So in drama therapy, we also enter that metaphoric space and access these figures that are, to me, these archetypal figures, these energies, gods and goddesses that go beyond time, and we draw from them. We our life becomes grand in that sense.
Yes.
So that's one of the early roots to me is in the use of ritual, and particularly shamanistic ritual. Second, the work of a man named Jay Moreno was also very critical in terms of bringing drama therapy to the United States and to the contemporary world. He was an MD, a psychiatrist born in Europe, who came to the U.S. in the 1930s and began this very innovative work with groups. He began experimenting with all sorts of theatrical activities in his therapy groups, and found that what happened as a result, the synergy or the dynamics of the group was much more alive and much more powerful than if he conducted a pure talk therapy group. So his work was also pivotal in bringing drama therapy to the United States, or starting the whole drama therapy movement. The word drama therapy, or the phrase, is relatively recent. It's really in the 1970s that phrase was first started to be used.
You mentioned metaphors and archetypes, which kind of brings up stories for me. And I'm curious, from your perspective, how do the stories we tell ourselves shape our lives?
Well, as I was saying before, and using the metaphor of our life being like a theater.
Yes.
And we are the actor, we are the director.
Yes.
We are also the writer. But we don't often see that. So to me, the stories that we tell ourselves every day are often hidden from our view. So the scripts we're writing are not scripts we're aware of, yet they are inevitably shaping our experiences every single day. So It could be as simple as I can never be in a loving relationship. Could be a story behind someone who, in every single encounter they have with someone they are romantically interested in, finding that person is not interested in them.
Yes.
To me, it's it's very important to always go back to ourself. I believe that our stories are like magnets. So we attract to us with our thoughts, with our beliefs, which to me are part of our stories, the very circumstances which we then often complain about to our friends and loved ones and our therapists, and don't quite understand why things are not going our way.
Actually, for those of us who know anything about hypnosis, some people actually are saying those things to themselves too, hypnotizing themselves, trancing themselves out, and then living it out. And yes, then complaining about it, which is, if it weren't so sad, it would be really funny. But anyway, please continue.
Well, the thing that you're mentioning about it being funny is actually a tool we use. Sometimes we, in drama therapy, we exaggerate these stories. Yes. We make them as big as possible. We give them a name, a monster name. We basically help people to see how ridiculous some of the stories are.
Blow it out. Exactly. Take it all the way to threshold.
Yes.
Nice.
When you take it to that level, then sometimes it loses its power over us.
I could definitely understand that, how that would be possible. And then I'm assuming the reverse is true too, that you can also act the new role that you would like to be in instead of those old ways that aren't working for them, correct?
Exactly, and that is the goal, or the intention is to replace these old stories with new, healthier stories which nourish us and which help us to live lives that we not just dream about, but that we can actually live here and now.
I could see how if one were going to see you from a one-on-one perspective, that it would be, I would assume, fairly easy to get into and understand or work through what those deep stories are, what those things that aren't working are, and what they want to do, and then work through that whole thing. But how do you do that in a group setting where there might be 10 people and everybody's situation is going to be very different? And how do you work through something like that with a group of people? Do you have themes for the workshops, or how does that work?
Good question. Well, sometimes we do have themes. It depends on the kind of group you want to structure, what the goal is. But in general, when I'm working with a group, to me, there's a kind of group synergy that takes place. And just in the way that when we go to the theater, if it's, to me, a really well-done production, we can often relate to it. There are these themes, these archetypal themes, these basic conditions of being human that come out. And in a similar way, within a group, what gets worked on is amazingly often related in some way to everyone's life. So some people, we say, are more warmed up. It's a term we use in drama therapy, warmed up to working directly on their issues. And so they need what's called less distance between themselves and their issues. And those might be the people in the group who are ready to say, look at their relationship with their husband, their wife, their boss, whatever it is that's troubling them. And they are primed and they are wanting to go. Other people might need more distance from their inner world. So for them, it might be, at least in the moment, more beneficial to be an observer or to play a part in somebody else's story in which they don't have to directly work on something that is scary for them or something that they're not quite ready for, but they can warm up to it by taking a part in another person's story. And it varies how that's done. There's a very specific approach in drama therapy called psychodrama, which was developed by Jay Moreno, the man I was mentioning before, which is a very structured approach to looking at stories in a group setting. And one person's story is usually chosen to be the story of a particular group. In other approaches, it's more open in terms of how the group is structured. So, but I would say that to me, in the end, we are all mirrors for each other and holograms for each other. So whatever story comes out, we can somehow relate to. Now, at the same time, I would consider, I would emphasize a person in a group speaking up to get their needs met or practicing that role, if they're not finding their needs are met in a group,
yes.
we might need to right. use that. That's the work right there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Stories. So, you know, it's funny. We all experience the same facts. And at the same time, you know, ask any policeman or any emergency worker, if they ask five people what happened at the same event, you'll get five different stories. So it really isn't the facts of our lives. You know, then we interpret them through our filters, our sensory filters. Then, of course, we create meaning, which we then act upon, which then leads to the summation of our lived experience. And so what I'm curious about is where you see yourself in that. You know, I just laid out five steps, kind of, where you see the process of drama therapy injecting itself, intervening for the good of the person who is the character, you know, the actor. And in addition to that, how much flexibility that gives them around knowing that, you know, they're not stuck, regardless of the facts of their lives. How much emotional freedom they get from it, I guess, is mm-hmm. what I'm asking.
Okay. So in terms of how drama therapy fits into that five-step model you right. described so nicely, right. I'm not sure I can remember all the steps, but but I have a similar perspective. I don't have five steps, but the way drama therapy for me fits into the first thing you were saying about the deconstruction of stories,
yes,
is by first, before we can deconstruct a story, we need to find out what the story is. So, and we do that by working currently with whatever it is that is most charged for a person. Usually, that if we work with that in the present moment, so it could be a real life situation, somebody just cannot stand how their partner speaks to them. Okay, so we look at that situation. We might enact it either in the real life, meaning one person acting out their role, their partner's role, then role reversing. And then often we tie that, not always, but often that enactment can, if it evokes some feeling that can be tied to some point earlier in life. And those early points in life in which we make a decision or we decide to believe a certain thing or act a certain way, those are called pivotal moments.
All green people steal, for instance, or
right.
or I'm just not that kind of person. I just don't do that kind of thing. Or and so we limit ourselves or we...
Exactly. Any kind of limiting belief, which then in turn leads to a limiting behavior.
Yes.
Which at the time was an attempt to solve a problem. We say that behaviors are attempts.
And probably mm-hmm. quite effectively solved the problem at that age.
Right, right. It probably did.
And now no longer serves the actor.
Exactly. So if I, for example, learned as a child that I had to always be good for mommy to love me, and then later in life I might have problems doing what I don't think is good mm-hmm. for somebody else.
Right.
So right. we begin to look at the stories in that way. And to me, what's really key is when we're looking at those stories is that we come from a place of compassion and acceptance of what had to happen in order to survive. Only when we come from that place of compassion and acceptance, then we can create space for those stories to move away, to have less of a hold on us. And then the new stories can come in or can set their roots down.
So how can we learn to tell new stories about ourselves and really become actors in a new play that is our life?
This is where the use of various drama therapy techniques, including role development, come in. Often when I'm working with someone, what emerges is what I would call a guide figure or some kind of wise soul. It could be a wizard, it could be a witch, it could be anything that the person associates as this place of wisdom. that serves as a liaison between their old story and their new story. So in my perspective, we all have these inner guides or inner teachers. So what we try to do, what I try to do in my work with people is to strengthen this guide, this voice of wisdom within each person, because each person has one, more than one sometimes, depending on what they want to create in their palette of characters. And that guide usually stays with them throughout the whole process in the form of voices, in the form of a mask. Sometimes I'll have people make a mask of their guide, or we also look at body posture and really creating a guide which is fully vital, fully filled with the vitality of the person. So that guide is like the leader into the new story. Then in terms of creating the new stories, what I try to emphasize is after we've developed the guide, we also need to develop we need to expand the role repertoire.
Yes.
So you have the guide, that's great, but to me it's not enough. Then we need the role repertoire in the outer world, so that when I go out into the world, or somebody goes out into the world, they actually have practice with new behaviors that they want to execute, behaviors that are going to support the new story. And to me, it's only when they are able to take action. I think in the beginning, Julie, you mentioned the three important components mm-hmm. of drama therapy to me, which are commitment, compassion, and action. So it's only in taking action that we continuously train ourselves to live in that way. Just like if we're an athlete, we need to continuously train our muscles if we're trying to run a marathon next year or do a triathlon. So the new stories really need to be fed and trained before they can step in and replace the old ones.
How frequently does someone, I guess typically, I don't know if there is a typically, engage in drama therapy? Since you said it kind of has to be ideally repeated to build that new muscle, is this something that someone does a one-week workshop and then does the rest on their own? Do they come once a week for a period of time? How do they reinforce that new muscle?
Hmm. Well, it of course varies from person to person. Typically, with individual therapy, a person will come once a week for a while, as long as they feel is necessary. It could be 6 months, it could be a year, it could be 2 years. People who are involved in drama therapy groups, it also, in my mind, benefit from a group that has some sort of regular structure. The danger, there's wonderful things about being involved in a weekend workshop or a day-long workshop. The danger for me when I think about day-long workshops is that there's not often a sufficient container to hold the whole process. I believe very strongly in the healing power of the group and in maintaining contact with a group that's supportive. A group in drama therapy often becomes like a substitute family, which helps the person develop these new behaviors that they want to be developing, new belief systems, and let go of the old ones. So to me, regular sustained contact is important.
Hmm.
One of the other dangers with doing a single session is that often when you leave people that open, often the drama therapy methods can be really powerful and evoke some emotional catharses. And catharses, in my mind, feel good. They release a lot of energy, but they're not enough, really, to facilitate lasting change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've discovered in my own work that it is a lot more about building a muscle. It isn't just about transformation or some huge breakthrough. Or breakthroughs are great. They provide wonderful insights, and those big energy releases are wonderful. And without additional consciousness and effort put into integrating new behaviors, new choices, it simply was just that, an event. a profound state that was wonderful, but doesn't inform the overall person's stage of development. At least that's been my experience.
That makes...
Yeah, I would agree. And just to add one thing to that, I feel really strongly that one thing that, that also helps with this integration of these new stories is the cultivation of the person's vitality and life force through play. To me, a lot of the diseases or diseases that we suffer, whether they're mental or physical, are often tied to a deficit in the imagination or a deficit in the ability to be spontaneous and make choices and play with our world, play with this very malleable stage that seems so rigid at times.
I know for me, I associate being spiritual with being playful, being spontaneous, being free, really in your body, free. Playing with life and playing in life. But could you say more about, you talked about deficiency in imagination be related to dis-ease in the body. I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure. Well, when I think of healthy imagination, first of all, maybe I'll talk about that first. I think about the world of children. I've also done a lot of work with children, both individually and in groups. And children have amazing imaginations. They have an amazing ability to play.
They're wonderful to be around.
Yes, they are. They are infectious with their playful spirit.
Yes.
And so, to me, children who can... Children are like our teachers. They show us that ability to play without inhibition, without... This is right, this is wrong, do that, don't do this. And their play is pretty much self-guided and, at least in the early years, lacks a very set structure. Whereas, interestingly, as children get older, their play becomes much more structured. See sports games with rules, regulations,
right.
Chutes and ladders, board games.
Right.
So, to me, what happens in the process of developing is... Children, as their superego or their inner critic comes in very strongly and starts to become one of the more dominant characters, they forget this ability to play. They don't want to play. They're scared to play. They're scared they might not be approved if they play in the way that a very young child plays. So what comes with that, to me, is dis-ease or an uncomfortableness with themselves. And I see this a lot when you start getting to the age of 9 or 10 with boys or girls. They're not as comfortable in their bodies anymore. They're a little more awkward and not as open to trying new things, whereas young children in general are pretty open. So similarly with adults, I believe that this dis-ease or this uncomfortableness with ourselves comes from a deficit in our own imagination of who we could be. What kind of life could we live? How could we behave? When our imagination is dried up, we don't have access to so many parts of ourselves that we would have access to otherwise. And I believe that what happens then is these symptoms, whether it's panic attacks or anxiety, low self-esteem, eating disorders, you name it, aggression, depression, all those shun words, they arise as a story. They're like callings. They're calling us back to ourselves because something is out of balance. So we need those symptoms in a way, because if we didn't have them, we wouldn't know that something is just not right.
Right.
Can you describe an example of someone who has created a life they love through the help of drama therapy?
Sure. Let's see who to choose. Well, aside from myself, I've worked with... One man for a while who was for many years struggling with the issue of not feeling wanted by women. And over and over and over again, he continually experienced a sense of always drawing women into his life who would reject him and not want him. And he was also able to see how he had this image of himself as a kind of clown in the crowd where he's funny and people love to be around him, but nobody really wants him in a romantic sort of way. He also had done some work with masks and realized that when he was wearing a mask, he was able to walk in different ways, to talk in different ways, to behave towards women in the play space anyhow, in ways he would never imagine doing in real life.
Yes, yes.
And so in our work together, we focused on both looking at this story that he'd created for himself as a man, which got him certain things. It got him many friends. It got him, it got him that he didn't have to risk intimacy. That was a payoff. One important thing in looking at these stories is to look at how these stories are also benefiting
what
us.
What purpose they're serving.
Exactly.
Because they certainly serve a purpose somewhere.
They did. And they do. And in this case, they certainly did. So he was able to see how he was getting certain needs met or certain fears put aside by keeping with this old story. He also began to see how he was projecting onto women his own story, or in other words, often people, rather than giving up the story, they just want their story to be right. And so he at the very early part of our work together, he would say that he wanted a woman to just love him and that would end everything and that would solve his problems. Well, I didn't buy that. Because in the end, it wasn't really the women, it was him.
Sure.
It was himself that needed to change the story he was telling and to open a space where he was really ready for love in order to draw in a woman who would love him. He wasn't ready for love. So over the course of our work together, he was able to really see that, to really back up into the witness role as he played out different scenes from his current life, scenes with women, scenes from his childhood, and then strengthen these other characters, including his guide, and practice new ways of being with women, new ways of talking to women in the world, and really new ways of thinking about himself. His play changed, the ending changed. Often, one of the things we do early on in a drama therapy session or in the work when I'm first starting with somebody is to look at how do you want this story to end? Not as if it's in the future, but as if it's now. And then we build that. What does this story of your life look like now? So we really clearly have a sense of what's going on.
Wow. Well, I think we're about out of time, but I wanted to thank you for this. This has been a really fascinating new eye-opening way of really working with people, and I really appreciate you bringing this to us today.
Soraya, if people want to work with you, how do they reach you?
They can reach me at the Living Arts Counseling Center, and I'll give the phone number there. It's 510-595-5500, extension 22. Or they can also visit my website, which is www.soraya.org.
Great.
Thank you, Soraya, for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'm Jason McLean. You can reach me through emotionalawareness.com.
I'm Julie Matthews, certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living. You can reach me at healthfullivingsf.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. Every Thursday at noon next week, we are going to have some amazing authors on the show, so I hope you will be with us then. Thanks for listening.